One of the things I would encourage people to think about is there's a much more difficult and valuable thing to get right for your product launch, aside from just knowing the product launch process. And there's no better way to say it than getting to the point where you can peer into your buyer's soul.
That's deep.
And I think it's that doesn't just help with your product launch process, that helps with everything when it comes to product marketing.
Hey, I'm Cody Bernard, and you're listening to Getting to Market, the show that gives you an inside look into what it takes to successfully bring a new product to market. In each episode, we'll chat with go-to-market leaders about their tools, tactics, and tricks using real-life examples so you can take your own product launches to the next level. My guest today is Chris Orlob, Director of Sales and former Senior Director of Product Marketing at Gong. Today's episode is brought to you by theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. If you're gearing up for a product launch and haven't heard about this course yet, you should definitely check it out. It was created by former Director of Product Marketing at Drift and current Director of Marketing at Privy, Dan Murphy. Dan has managed over 60 launches in his career, and so he put together this framework for planning, goal setting, and getting your team rallied behind your launches every time you go to market. Now, this course normally goes for $99, but since you're a listener of Getting to Market, you can get it today for only $59. All you have to do is go to theproductlaunchmasterclass.com and use the promo code GETTINGTOMARKET. All one word, all caps. So with that, let's get into today's interview. I'm here with Chris Orlob, Director of Sales at one of the fastest growing companies in B2B and newly recognized unicorn, Gong. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk with you. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got your start at Gong.
I started my SaaS career as a sales professional. And for my first several years, I had this desperate, naive, burning desire to be an entrepreneur. I say it was a naive desire because I had not done it before. So eventually, you know, I saved enough money after being a sales professional for a few years to make that leap and live off of that life savings, which was a little bit crazy to do, and build a company, or at least attempt to build a company. That's probably a more accurate way to say it. And the company was very similar to what Gong does, or at least it aspired to be very similar to what Gong does. This was back in 2015, and it was called Conversature. It was, a SaaS company that recorded and analyzed sales conversations, the same intent behind what Gong does. And after about a year and a half of doing that with a couple technical co-founders, we started getting pretty dangerously close to running out of runway, despite, having got some initial success. So we had to close up shop. And I found my way into working with Gong from there. So I kind of continued the journey. It actually feels like the same journey. Even though I didn't start Gong, I still consider Gong to be a little bit of my baby. And, I joined the company in November 2016, which is coming up about 4 years ago now. And our ARR at the time was a little over $200,000, which just a tiny little company. And 4 years later, here we are and having fun.
So you got your start in Gong with a product marketing team building out that function, but you're currently the director of sales. How did that transition kind of happen?
Yeah, so one of the things that Amit Bendov, who is our CEO, recognized during our time at Conversature was we were really good at marketing on a shoestring budget. And at that time in my career, I actually wanted to try my hand at product marketing. Like I said, I had been a sales professional my entire career before that, and I wanted to get into product marketing. And so there was alignment between he thought I was good at it, and I actually wanted to do it. And so I did that for about 2.5 years. It was a new role for me, and I did well in some respects, and I learned a lot of lessons through trial and error in other respects. And after 2.5 years, I realized that was kind of a tour of duty for me, and I was more so a sales professional slash leader trapped inside a marketer's body. And so I wanted to go back to the dark side of having your head on a chopping block every quarter.
So on this podcast, the goal is to, deconstruct the product launch process just to give everybody listening a behind the scenes look into what actually goes into a successful launch. And I'm sure people are probably listening and asking themselves like, oh, well, why would we have a director of sales on the line to figure out or talk us through the go-to-market process? But obviously you had a huge, heavy role to play in one of the latest launches that you guys brought to market earlier this year back in March, which was Deal Intelligence. Could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, your involvement there?
Deal Intelligence has been a part of Gong's vision since the very beginning. You know, when you rewind back to 2016, we were basically like a Zoom recorder with some bells and whistles on it. And that was never the full intention. You know, Amit had kind of sold me on the vision of what this thing could become, which is capturing a variety of customer conversations across all mediums and plotting that across the deal timeline. The launch process actually goes back all the way to, you know, the inception of the company. And it's having that vision in mind. Now, we didn't start to put things in motion really until it was probably early 2019, which still seems like a long time ago because, you know, to your point, we really announced this to the world and quote unquote launched it in March 2020. But we had been kind of test selling it for most of 2019 to get the talk track right and iron out some of the, you know, bugs with the product. But one of the things I would encourage people to think about is there's a much more difficult and valuable thing to get right for your product launch, aside from just knowing the product launch process. And there's no better way to say it than getting to the point where you can peer into your buyer's soul.
That's deep.
And I think it's that doesn't just help with your product launch process, that helps with everything when it comes to product marketing. Because one of the skill sets that I had, or one of the superpowers that I had when I was in product marketing, is I know how to speak and write very resonantly to our audience. And that's because I came from that audience and I've interviewed hundreds of people within that audience. And I think if you start with a mindset of like, all right, what kind of tactic matching are we going to do for this launch? And what kind of press outlets are we going to pursue? And you know, what kind of, you know, shiny things are we going to employ in this launch? But you're not yet at a place where you can tell a story that articulates your buyer's pain better than they can even articulate it themselves, then your launch is just not going to go as well as you hoped. You're basically building a car without putting gasoline in the car. And the gasoline is being able to like really speak in a way that only comes from understanding your buyer's pain very deeply. So that's the first, I think, point I would make, not just about product launches, but really any external facing activity that product marketing touches.
You kind of hit home a point that's been the most important thing, just I think in any sort of go-to-market, is understanding what is the pain we're actually solving for our customer and being able to kind of have the ability to have done a ton of research or put yourself in their shoes to understand what they're going through, potentially even figuring out ways how to go and solve those pains. That all comes well before these more like vanity type of go-to-market deliverables, which are the press release, the product video, and, you know, everything else that you have on your go-to-market checklist. So I think you kind of nailed the probably most important foundational piece of the launch process, and that's defining what problem are we actually solving.
And you know, when I was in product marketing, a lot of people gave me praise that I was good at it. And I would actually push back against that. I would say I'm good at product marketing to sales leaders. If you put me in an environment where I had to market to engineering leaders, I wouldn't know what the hell to say. You know, it's because the most important thing is the understanding of the audience. So, you know, you can get to, if you haven't been in the audience before, there are things you can do to get to the point where you do understand them deeply, but you have to go through some sort of process that puts you in a position to not just intellectually understand their pain. That's where most product marketers stop, by the way.
Right.
You know, they go through the motions of understanding their audience's pain, and they stop when they have an intellectual understanding of the pain. You need to go past intellectual. Your light bulb needs to turn on in your head to the point where you can start to like feel it yourself. You know, if I'm a sales leader and it's the beginning of the quarter and I called a $5 million number and I'm halfway through the quarter and I just had a bunch of risk in my pipeline represent that I'm not going to be able to make that number anymore. That's pain. That is having egg on your face. When you get into your next meeting with your CEO, that's having your CRO and CMO call you out in the middle of a meeting being like, wait a second, why did you just downgrade your forecast by 20%? And the gut-wrenching feeling that comes along with that, now we're cooking with gas. If you can start to feel that, everything else in product marketing is going to start to come a lot easier. Like, yes, there are other skills you also need to be good at. Like, if you can't write or speak or communicate well, you're as deeply as you understand your audience's pain, you're probably going to struggle a little bit. But if you can understand your audience's pain really deeply, and you can communicate well, and you can rally internal people along a single strategy and get them aligned around a launch, now you're gonna do really well for yourself.
Right. And I think you touched on a few different pieces of that entire go-to-market process I want to like click down on a little bit. First being the internal marketing aspect of it. I think getting everybody, you know, marching in the same direction, getting the excitement internally, because if you can't convince your internal teams to get excited about what you're bringing to market, how are you going to become close to getting, you know, your customers and prospects to be excited about it? We'll touch on that in a little bit. But the other piece that you mentioned around, you know, getting more involved with customers and understanding their problem, you mentioned that with Deal Intelligence specifically that happened years ago. It's always been the DNA of Gong. What was the trigger that kind of pushed Gong in the direction to say, hey, we should go and solve this problem?
The problem was the trigger, right? So like, it, you know, if you go back to the founding of Gong, the trigger that dictated the vision that eventually led to Deal Intelligence was that Amit, our CEO, was formerly CEO of Sisense. And the story is he had a bad quarter. And he didn't know why. He had a bunch of deals fall through. He had risk in his pipeline for that quarter that he could not identify. And so the genesis of Gong started with firsthand experience of the problem. That's where the whole thing got triggered, because like Amit was not like, you know what, we should start a company that records Zoom calls and like, you know, make sales reps a little bit better. It was more like, how the hell do I never let this happen? How do I get to a point where I know my quarter well in advance? And the first thing that came to his mind was, well, I don't know what my people are saying in the middle of a deal. And, you know, let's capture the first meaty version of that, which is the Zoom call. And eventually it's let's add email to that. So now we can see the timeline of a deal. And so the trigger event, you know, there almost wasn't a trigger event. It was just like the trigger event was the genesis of the entire company. Now, the thing that eventually led us to finally pulling the trigger on launching this was just an incubation period of test selling it. The product was probably ready to launch at some point in 2019, but the message was not ready to launch yet. We had the product ready. We didn't really know how to talk about it, though. We did like this mini launch, which really wasn't a launch. It wasn't like external facing, except for in the trenches. And we found really quickly that like we had this powerful product that we just could not articulate well to our audience. And so we spent the better part of 2019, test selling to refine the talk tracks. And it just kind of, it's like one thing led to another. It was this iterative process of refining our understanding of the problem, the value message that went along with that. And once we felt, you know, 80% secure that we had it right, now it's time to launch.
So that's interesting. You mentioned that the product was done well before the launch, but you wanted to make sure that the messaging was crisp, that it was going to land with your prospective customers. When you actually validated the pain and the solution that Deal Intelligence was going to offer, what was the next step in the process? Did you try to go and roll this out to a few customers? Did you try to go and you know, do more of like a private type of alpha or beta program?
We did a beta program, which was part of it. But the thing we did in parallel was test selling, because one of the things that we ran into was we felt like we understood the problem we were solving at a high level, you know, forecasting and pipeline management. But when you actually sell something, you have to be really nuanced in your explanations of the problem. And that part is where we were falling short. We knew that the general value categories of this thing was pipeline management and deal intelligence and forecast accuracy. But we couldn't tell a story that went much further than those like broad categorical descriptions. you know, if I tell you the problem is pipeline management, and then I get onto a sales call and I go, this thing helps you manage your pipeline better, the customer's going to be like, great, tell me more about that. And then you're like, well, I can't, because we haven't gotten that far.
Or they're going to say there's 8,000 other vendors out there who are going to solve the exact same problem.
Yeah. We had to become more layered with our messaging. It's like, all right, we understand the area of opportunity that we should be talking about, which is deal intelligence. How do we tell a much more nuanced story? And eventually it started to become, you know, if you think about what it takes to build a predictor, if we talk to a lot of revenue leaders every day, and they're generally concerned with two things. One is predictable pipeline, and the other is executing your sales motion. And when you think about what needs to be done to manage your reps to being able to do that, well, you've got to identify, are we selling to power? And are we running great discovery calls in such a way that's going to lead to a crisp demo? And are we setting success criteria and yada, 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 until you tell the whole story that encapsulates everything that goes into a successful management of a pipeline? That's a much more nuanced message than, you know, we help you convert more of your pipeline into closed revenue.
So once you actually have, you know, that message and you roll that out to your customers, can you go a little bit deeper into what test selling actually means?
It's not as like rhythmic or methodical or intelligent as I'm making it out to be. There's not much more to it. It's like, hey, we've got to launch this thing pretty soon. You know, we plan to do it in March. And we know how to talk about it in a press release, because that's a truncated form of communication. You've got, you know, like 500 words. What we're not so good about is facing off against a prospect and being able to, you know, look them in the eye and claim that we understand their problem and how this product solves it. And so, there's not much more to it than that. And I think the reason there's not a lot to it, and it seems so obvious to me, is because we use Gong. You know, the product marketers, it's not complicated for us to understand what's working and what's not, because we're listening to the sales calls the whole way. I just realized that everybody listening to this podcast probably is not at that point. And frankly, I don't have a lot of good advice. You know, I had this kind of superpower where none of this was a question mark, because I could end my day at 5 p.m. and spend the next 90 minutes just going through the calls that day where our reps pitched deal intelligence. And I could say, oh, this talk track is not working, this one is. This talk track is not working, this one is. How do we start to culminate like a greater sales narrative out of what we're learning and what we're not, or what's working and what's not working? I think the advice I would have to anybody who doesn't have that luxury is make sure you're just spending enough time shadowing your salespeople. But, you know, as far as test selling goes, like, I don't think you even have to be that methodical about it. It's just, you know, let's put this thing in the hands of, you know, a small group of really smart salespeople. That's one thing you want to make sure is like, give it to your best salespeople so that you know if it fails, it's the message and not the rep. Because if you give it to, you know, the bottom performers, you don't know if it's the message or the performer. And let's start going to market with it for about a month. Let's keep fast communication cycles with how this is going. You know, let's not wait a month and then assess the results. Like, constant communication, constant monitoring and assessing of the message. And just like any other rapid learning exercise, eventually the answer becomes very obvious if you understand and grasp the problem and the situation really deeply.
How do you balance that with the people who, you know, jump in and say, all right, I'm bought in, I'm all in on this idea, I'm going to buy this product, where the product might not be ready at that point in time or ready to be shipped out to customers? Is it something that you preface early on with the customers where you let them know, hey, this is something that we are developing and we are going to be testing this message? Or do you do more of blind testing where you just, you know, arm the rep with the message that you want to try to test out in the market? And then if the customer does buy in, sign on as a new customer, then you can deliver that product when the time is ready.
Yeah, I think it's more intuitive than scientific. Like, I know we marketers always want to be like, hey, this landing page was at converted at 15.6%. This one's 14%. And therefore, this one wins. We should be questioning how much we're valuing measurement in science and marketing, because it underplays the value of intuition. Intuition at one point, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, was almost like a bad word, not just in marketing, but like in business. It was like everything had to be backed up by data. You can't split test, at least easily, like a sales narrative. These are like acts of creativity, and the right answer is going to come from intuition. And it's not like intuition, like, you know, the gods are coming down from the clouds and giving you the answer after you drink a pint of wine and your creativity is flowing. The answers come from being really deeply embedded in your market. You can probably hear my kids like screaming bloody murder in the background right now, which has been going on and off all day, but such is life. So,
that makes sense to me. So far we've talked about identifying a pain that your customers are looking to get solved for them, bringing that through to validating that with your customers, followed by going out and testing that message out into the market to see if it resonates. What's after that? What is involved, you know, for the go-to-market motion from there? Like, I'm talking more now, we're gearing up for launch, we're a few months out. How am I working with the internal teams to make sure that the sales team is ready, the CS team is ready, the marketing team is ready to have our backs on launch day? How did that look for you guys as you were looking to bring Deal Intelligence to market?
Yeah, one of the frameworks we used was tier one, tier two, and tier three launches. And Deal Intelligence was pretty emphatically a tier one. So I can't remember the exact criteria, but tier one more or less is the ones you want to make a big splash. It's not just something you're announcing to your current customer base. You're announcing it to the market, your current customer base. You're trying to make waves in the press. So the first step is, like, you know, find your own way of categorizing your launches, and then match tactics to go with each of those tiers. You know, so tier one, you're going to do a press release. You're probably going to do some form of analyst relations. You're going to equip your salespeople with probably a pitch deck, data sheet. And then tier two and tier three are, you know, a little bit more geared toward either, I don't want to say quieter, but just more relevant to like the current customer base. And based on how you tier that, your execution plan will be a derivative of the tiering. So I would say start with your tiering, because it's going to dictate the different things you have to do. In other words, if it's a tier three launch, like, you know, its gong comes out with snippets, which is a really small incremental feature that's only going to make sense to current customers, we probably don't have to run a sales training. I don't think any press outlet is going to pick up that story. And so now that we know that and the tactics that have to go along with it, that's going to mold the rest of our execution plan. But on tier one, which is what Deal Intelligence was, we wanted analysts to know about this because we wanted to change the name of the category. The sales team obviously had to be very well trained on it, because it put us into a different stratosphere from the competition, and it was a totally different value prop. So if I could be more concise in, you know, giving advice in this area, the whole action plan behind the launch should end up being a derivative of being really intentional behind how you categorize this launch, who the audience is, like market versus current customers or both, and what tactics and strategies will come out of that based on how you tiered it. Being really clear on the outcomes you want to achieve with the launch will also dictate your launch plan. So for example, and the outcomes don't always have to be incredibly measurable. It's great if they are, but one of our desired outcomes for the Deal Intelligence launch was to shift the category. We wanted to change from conversation intelligence, which is what we used to be called, to revenue intelligence. And so if that's the outcome that we're going for, again, that outcome, that desired outcome, dictates our execution plan. If we're trying to do that, we have to talk to analysts. If we're trying to do that, we have to make waves on LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. Everything after that is just the headache of aligning everybody and putting things in Asana and assigning tasks out and all of the fun stuff that us creative product marketers just love doing. So,
no, the tiered launch structure is something that I hold very near and dear to my heart. It's helped me, you know, with all of the product launches that I've done in my career. And I think it's just a really good way at structuring what you're bringing to market. And to your point, like having a playbook for each one of those. When you go and think about those tiers for Gong, you say that you look at like, what is the goal of this launch? Is it more about awareness? Is it more about generating revenue? Is it more about customer adoption? Like those metrics, do you also have a set list of metrics that will be impacted by each of those tiers? Or is it more, you will build the launch goals into the respective launch based on what it is?
It depends on which outcome we're talking about. So something like strategic objectives will often not have a great measurement, at least in the immediate term, because it's like with deal intelligence, we're trying to win the market, like market share. Not a good way to measure that in the weeks leading after a launch event. More tactical things though, of course, like do we want to get a bunch of demo requests as a result of our deal intelligence launch? Yes, let's figure out a way to measure that. Do we want to get press mentions? Yes, let's figure out a way to measure that. It actually leads me to one point that I would make though, is there's a difference between a product launch and a product introduction. And to me, a product launch is a point in time on a product introduction. The product launch is an event and the product introduction is a process. And the implication of that is, and I think every product marketer is about to nod in agreement with what I'm about to say, but I would guess that their behavior is very different. The launch is the start of a process. It's not the end of a process. The product introduction, the end goal, is to dominate the market segment that that product was designed for. And so when you launch, like, yes, take a day to celebrate, you know, pour some champagne, do your, you know, toasts and everything, but you're not done. Like if you're done there, basically all you did was throw the product over the fence for sales to then go figure out. And what you have to do is the even harder work over the next 12 to 18 to 24 months of iterating the product, iterating the message, iterating the routes to market in such a way that will help you achieve the end result you're trying to get to, which is win that market segment.
I like that. I think that's something that I think all product marketers have to keep in mind. The product launch is, to your point, a single point in time, and it's when the work just gets started.
It's discouraging to think about that because of how much work goes into, you know, what I'm characterizing as an event in time, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but you know, you can't stop there.
Chris, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about Gong's go-to-market process and the explosion of growth that you guys have had over the last few years. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cody.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Getting to Market. If you like today's show, hit the subscribe button and tune in every Thursday to hear from more marketing pros on how they run their product launches. I'll see you on the next episode.